If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
You just found the most downloaded fitness, health, and entertainment podcast. This is Mind Pump. All right, today's episode, we talk about goals and why hitting your goals can be detrimental. Believe it or not, you won't want to miss this episode. Now, it's brought to you by a sponsor, Seed, the world's best probiotic, hands down, is Seed. So if you want to reap the benefits of probiotics, better skin, better digestion, lowered inflammation, enhanced fat loss, better adaptation to workouts, no joke, probiotics do this, you're going to want to go with Seed. Check them out. Go to seed.com/mindpump. Use the code 25mindpump for 25% off your first month's order of Seed's Daily Symbiotic. Also, we're in the middle of a massive launch. We put out a trainer and coaching course. For the first time ever, Mind Pump has put together a course for trainers that teaches trainers how to become successful, make money, and get your clients incredible results. These are the things that we taught trainers when we managed gyms years ago. And believe me, it works. A lot of people already have it, and people are already reporting that they're getting incredible results with their clients and with their businesses. Anyway, because it's a launch, here's what's included for free with the new course. MAPS Prime Pro program, a live virtual lead generation masterclass, all 11 MAPS mods workouts for free, all 13 MAPS guides for free. You also get $200 off. That's a launch discount. And you'll get access to a private trainer group on Facebook only for people who have this course. If you're interested, go to mindpumpfitnesscoaching.com. Use the code 200 off for that discount. We're also running a sale on some workout program bundles. We have the New to Weightlifting bundle, the Body Transformation bundle, the New Year Extreme Intensity bundle, and the Body Transformation bundle 2.0. All of them $300 to $350 off. Go check them out. Go to mapsjanuary.com. All right, here comes the show. Setting goals and hitting goals. This seems to be part of the formula of success in fitness, but here's what a lot of people don't tell you. Hitting your goals can be depressing. It's true. There's something called arrival fallacy. Maybe you've experienced it yourself. You dream about hitting a goal. You work hard towards that goal. You finally hit that goal, and then the come down, and it's quite hard. Today's episode, we're talking all about how to avoid that and how to enjoy the process. Do you guys ever experience this with clients?
Oh, yeah.
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 This was
a common one.
Yeah. I used to, you know, I didn't realize what it was at first, but I would see clients that would like, more commonly, you would see this with clients where they would sign up for like a race.
Mm-hmm.
So people are like, oh, you know, I don't work out now at all, or I'm not fit, but I'm going to sign up for this marathon. I want you to help, you know, train me on top of it. And they'd work hard and they'd be consistent and they'd be real motivated. Then they'd do the marathon. And then it was like, it got to the point where if somebody told me they were going to hire me to do a race, mm-hmm. and they weren't like, this wasn't what they always did, that I would talk them out of it. So I was like, no, you are going to stop afterwards. It was like clockwork that these people would train for this marathon or this race or whatever, get to that point, and then lose all desire, motivation, enjoyment out of what they were doing. Stop.
Yeah.
And totally stop. And then, you know, of course, I've experienced it myself.
Well, yeah. And as they're going through it, a lot of it was like they were doing it in spite of what they enjoy. So it was like not – It definitely the process for them was all discipline, and it was just like, I'm going to get there. And then they get there. They don't want to repeat a lot of the process that got them there because that was like not enjoyable for them. And so it's like, where do I go from here? And so that was kind of a hard conversation to have afterwards.
What do you think it is? You think it's the buildup? Like they have built it up in their head to be something greater, like, oh, when I get there, I'm going to feel like a different person. Yeah. I'm going to have all these things. Uh-huh. And then you get there and then it's just like, oh, it's not.
Yeah, there's a term for it. I said it. It's arrival fallacy.
Are they all the same? Is that work? Like, so the arrival fallacy is with, it could be for a lot of things.
Yes,
right?
It can.
I mean, ever had this? I mean, I remember.
Like if I just make this much money, I'll be happy. Or if I just get that car, I'll be happy. Or if I just, you know.
Totally. Even if you ever had, did you guys ever have like a crush on like a girl when you were younger and like you wanted her for like the longest time and then like years later, maybe you guys got together with that and then it just never lived up to
the personality sucks.
Yeah. Like, ah. No. You were so much into getting to the place where that could be a possibility. And so you thought about it for so long. And then when it finally arrives, it's just like, oh, it's not what.
Yeah. They call it post-achievement depression or postpartum depression in relation to achievement, arrival fallacy, like we just said. Remember Mark Manson? He was on the show. He's the author of The Subtle Art of Not Giving a F, right? Mm-hmm. He wrote that book. And he talked about how his dream had always been to be a best-selling author. And then when he finally accomplished it, he went through the hardest depression of his entire life. And he talked about this as well. And he's like, and when you read about this, what it is, and this is why people get caught in a trap, right? Where they set a goal, this is the goal I'm going to hit. And then they hit the goal. And again, if you look at the data on like weight loss, for example, a significant percentage of people, it's not a majority, but a significant percentage, something like 30% of people who set a weight loss goal actually hit it. Mm-hmm. It's a big number when we consider how many millions of Americans try to lose weight. But then of that, whatever the number was, 25, 35%, almost all of them get the weight back. Almost every single person gains the weight back within a year or two. And they experience this feeling. And when you read about it, psychologically, what happens is we paint this picture. It's this this happiness myth where, oh my God, if I lost 30 pounds, I'm going to feel like this and everything's going to be amazing and life's going to be so much better and so much – it's everything. Or if I just hit that milestone in money that I need to make, or if I could just do that deadlift or whatever, everything's going to be so amazing. But you're always let down. You're always let down because the things that really make you happy in life are not those. In fact, when we get – obviously we're going to talk about fitness – what you end up realizing is the 30-pound weight loss isn't what is going to make you happy. It's all the stuff you do, if you do it right, to lose the 30 pounds that makes you happy.
Well, it's not exactly the same, but I know a lot of athletes that I've talked to and me personally even have gone through that sort of transition phase where it's like you identify so much with this one track. Like my identity is me trying to get to the ultimate championship game or achieve this kind of success. And elongate my career. Once my career is over, or if it's cut short, what do I do now? I have like this period of depression where it's like I have to reinvent myself. I have to think about other things to get involved with, and to then identify in that direction. And it's like I feel like the same thing kind of happens when a lot of the clients I've had that have achieve some of those like weight loss goals or some of those, maybe they competed on stage or maybe they did some of these events and they sort of, well, that was like my entire focus and I identify as this person, but now what do I do?
Do you think it's possible that we reach somebody who's in that and convince them otherwise? Like, I don't know if it's I think back to, and I think the thing that I can relate to the most with this was, the financial one, right? Yeah. Like I had built that up since I was a kid, right? So that was like wasn't like I thought about it for a year or two. I thought about it for decades. Like when I get to this place, financially, like I'm just going to be so happy or whatever like that. And then you reach that and it's just like, oh, I'm actually unhappy right now. This is weird, right? But I don't think there's anything, I don't even know if me could go back in time and talk to me and convince me otherwise. In fact, I think I remember people telling me when I was and my attitude was like, yeah, well, I'll solve that problem. I'll get there.
Just like people we tell
saying. Yeah. Is it possible? Like when you become, because hitting big goals, whether it be a big lofty financial goal or a big lofty physical fitness goal, those are big goals. They're hard. They're hard to achieve, right? I mean, there's more millionaires than there are people with six pack abs, right? So it's no joke to try and do that. And in order to get to a place where you can even achieve that, the level of mindset that you need to have, is it breakable? Can you get to it?
I think it is if it's communicated, right? Like, because you need goals. Otherwise you don't know what you're aiming for. So I think someone listening in that case may be arguing and be like, what are you talking about? I need to have a goal. This is what drives me. This is my, so it's not that that goals are bad. It's idolizing them and falling in love with them.
Yeah, that's the problem. Yeah, I think the key to this conversation is not to deter somebody from having these lofty goals, but better yet, help them set the expectation. Right? Like that's where I think I failed, was that when I got to that place, had somebody maybe communicated like, oh yeah, no, there's a lot of amazing things that you're going to have when you get to this level. It's going to open all these great doors for you. One thing that will almost inevitably happen though is like your expectations will be off. Like your expectations of how you think you're going to feel won't be what you think they are, and this is the fallacy.
Well, that'll bring us – so that's going to kind of illustrate the first thing to focus on. So I'll ask you this, Adam, because you just brought up how you had a financial goal. Looking back, you remember that hitting that goal wasn't what you thought it was, right?
Right.
But looking back at that whole era or time, I could probably guarantee that you have very fond memories of the way towards that goal.
The grind.
The process.
Yeah.
Like if you look back, it wasn't hitting that goal where you look back and go, that was awesome. It was like, oh man, actually it was awesome when I figured this out. I had to grind this. I had to develop this. I had to go through that challenge. It was all that stuff that you probably look back and
oh, 100%. And the thing that I probably value the most, and I've talked about this too. This is why we've talked about this before with like, if everybody could buy a pill and then you just be the physique you wanted, we'd be miserable and unhappy because the best part about it is the figuring out process, right?
The process.
And that same thing goes for the financial journey too. It's like, this is why I think we see those examples of people that have the windfall of money or inheritance, why they end up blowing or what that is, because there's behaviors that are built along the way that are probably the most valuable part of so the most valuable part of achieving that level of money is also the part of blowing some of it, losing some of it, making some bad decisions along the way, creating better habits and having better financial hygiene. Like, so there's these things that is the most valuable part, because that's the part that's now carried to this next, season of my life.
So now you don't repeat those mistakes.
That's right.
Yeah. And I think that's a main point for me. It's like, you got to go through those struggles, each part of that, each level of that journey, and really acknowledge a lot of these things that you've overcome and troubleshot, past. So that way too, like this is a level now that you're not just going to achieve it, but you're going to be able to maintain it and be able to then, progress from there.
Right. Yeah. The process of getting to a goal is a lot of dopamine, right? And dopamine is a driver. It's not an achiever. It's not like got there. It's a get there, get there, get there. So once you're there, you get like a dopamine withdrawal. Like that's what they're saying is happening on a, kind of neurological level. I experienced this in a short period of time. I've experienced this many times, but I remember one example is this was years ago when my wife and I were kind of first started dating. She was big into hiking. Now I thought I liked hiking because she asked me, do you like hiking? I said, yeah. Now for me, hiking was like on a nice trail through the woods or whatever.
Right.
But she did like hiking, like the kind where there's like not really
a backpack.
Oh yeah, where you're like, it's like people die, right? It's like this really dangerous, kind of stuff. But because I just started dating her, I don't want to, I want to kind of impress her or whatever. I said, yeah, I like hiking too. Let's do it. So we were in Kauai and there's a trail called the Kalalau Trail, which I know you've done that too, right?
Yeah.
In fact, they tell you there, the people who live there say, don't do the trail if you don't live here, because it can be pretty bad. Like you have to hike in, you camp out.
It's gnarly.
But so we get there and of course she's all like well-versed in hiking. I have no idea what I'm getting into. So I'm like, let's do this trail. So anyway, we do this crazy trail and it was definitely treacherous, definitely out of my comfort zone. At one point we're walking through water, holding our equipment up and, the cliff is on the other side on some parts. And it was pretty gnarly for someone like me. But I remember we got to this one part and it was this beautiful view. It was this incredible view. Now the view was gorgeous, but had you flown me in on a helicopter and I landed and got out and looked at the view, not that big of a deal. Mm-hmm. And when I think back at that whole process, I don't think about the view. I think about getting there. That was the whole, that was where all the value was. And the same is true for fitness. So having goals is great, but the key is to try to fall. So don't fall in love with the goal. A goal is a target. But don't fall in love with the goal. Don't fantasize about the goal. Like everything's going to be so amazing when I get there, because it's not. It's not. It's going to be under what you believe it to be in terms of expectations. Really what you need to do is focus on falling in love with the process. The day-to-day process. Like, man, I woke up today and I didn't want to work out, but I did. And I did that workout and I didn't feel good, but then my shoulder felt better and it was good. Oh, I hit a PR tomorrow, yesterday. And so today I'm going to do this. And when you fall in love with the process, what happens is you'll always follow the process. And then the goals are milestones along the way, like signs along the trail of a hiking trail. There is no end goal. There's just, here's mile one, here's mile two. But I'm going to keep going because I love following the process. Once you do that, then the goals hit themselves. And you don't get that post-achievement depression because there is no achievement, right? It's all about the process. And that's that. That means you have to focus on it, though.
Now, how do you do that? That's the real question. And I think the key to that is attaching it to other things than just like the main goal, which the main goal many times is, oh, I want to lose 30 pounds or, oh, I want to look a certain way. But in order to fall in love with the process, I think you have to find ways that you attach these small wins or small behavioral changes, how they impact your life in other ways mm-hmm. that maybe you didn't, you like, I talked recently on the podcast mm-hmm. about how I was sharing with you guys that you had one of these moments again, where I realized like, man, it's so crazy what a different husband and dad I am when I just get exercise and movement yeah. in the day. It's like, I didn't make any, that exercise and movement that day that I was speaking of, I definitely didn't make any huge strides towards my getting jacked goal or losing body fat percentage goal or mm-hmm. getting stronger goal. It was like barely anything, but just getting in there, moving and doing a few movements played such a huge role in like how I showed up as a dad and as a husband that afternoon or that evening at home. And so the way that I focus on the process is when I have these little behavioral things like that are leading towards this big goal, I look for other things that I can attach it to in life other than that's attached yeah. to the goal. Yeah. Like it's like, oh, that's why I do that. And if you can do that, you can focus, I feel like, on the process.
Yeah, each good decision you make has like a compounding effect. And so you have to like look at and see how that sort of affects things further on. And, you know, me making a good choice nutritionally, like, you know, it's going to give me a little bit more energy. It's going to give me a little bit better sleep. I'm always like constantly evaluating that. If I'm more productive because I'm more active, you know, I have more energy. Like you just start attaching it to all these other traits that, you know, definitely you could see it if you're looking for it.
Yeah. I mean, which is kind of the second part, which is to like really be present. Like if you think of a great artist, doesn't fall in love with the painting that they finish, the masterpiece. They don't look at it and go, wow, that's it's the painting that they're in love with. They're in love with the creating.
It's the happy trees.
It's a musician, same thing. The musician loves creating, right? The creator, the person who's, you know, the person who works out consistently, the goals are great and they reflect the hard work and the dedication, but they're so present in what they're doing that they just enjoy the process. Like I've worked out when I felt great, when I felt bad, when it was to relieve stress, when I was in pain, when I felt, you know, when I was hitting PRs, whatever. The process itself I enjoy so much, I don't think I'll ever stop, regardless of what, you know, lies ahead. I think I'm just going to do it because I enjoy the process. And there's this old, I don't know if it's Japanese, I want to say Japanese practice, maybe Doug will know, where they do these really intricate designs in sand. And there's these huge sand gardens where they do these, they pass these rakes over, I think it is. I don't know if, is it Japanese, Doug? Am I tripping?
I'm not sure.
Okay. They make these incredibly intricate designs. Mm-hmm. And then when they
rake
get to,
them and everything.
Yeah. And when they get to the very, and it's literally a practice. Yeah. I want to say it's maybe tied to Buddhism, but they make mm-hmm. these intricate designs. And when they get to the very end, they wipe it clean and yep. start all over.
Yeah.
They never leave it to look at it.
It's a form of meditation.
It's Tibet.
Okay.
It's all about, it's, and it really is an incredible practice of being present and, you know, if falling in love with the process or the journey.
Yeah.
And so when you're working out, if you're thinking about, I'm doing this so that I can, I'm doing this so that, and wow. you're living in the future, I'm doing this so I can look like this, so I can feel like this, so I can lift this much weight. You're not living right now. You're living in the future. Think about your job, right? Think about your job. If your job is just so I can get to the end of the day, so I can go home, so I can save enough money to retire, eventually you get to retirement and then you'll get that post-achievement depression, which is real, by the way. People achieve this, get this in retirement. But imagine if what you did, you just learned to enjoy. You just love that process. Well, you'll never want to stop, even if you had enough money to retire. And that requires you being present in the moment. I've caught myself doing this many times where I get to a certain point and they look back and they go, man, I totally, I should have been more present. Like I missed that whole period, which was actually kind of awesome now that I think about it. Yeah. But I was so focused on where I am now that, you know, it's, and luckily, you know, just more personal, what we do here, you know, God, when we started, we were in Doug's living room. Now, mm-hmm. thankfully, I think we were all old enough at that time, mature enough to remind ourselves to be present. But even then, I look back and I go, man, that was a good time. We had no money. We weren't making any money, I should say. The business was whatever, but it was a great time.
It's hard when you're driven and it's, you know, you get caught up future tripping, as I've heard it expressed. But Yeah, when you're able to slow down, really like pay attention and be present with what's in front of you, I feel like there's a study out there in terms of like the happiest people are the ones that are most present, like on a day-to-day basis. And you see this also as an example of like flow state with athletes or flow state, in general, once you achieve that flow state, you can't achieve flow state if you're not like hyper present in that moment.
Yeah. So in taking that in relation to exercise and training and going to the gym, what does that look like or what does it not look like? So does that mean like when I go to the gym, if my goal is being ultimately present in the moment and not fixated on my future goal or distracted about the fight I just had with my wife or thinking about, oh my God, this bill I got to pay. So what does that look like putting that into
practice? Here's what it doesn't look like. It doesn't look like you're off in your mind somewhere else just trying to get through it. Okay. Because you'll see this with people working out where they're just like, I got to get through it. One of the reasons why I like strength training so much is it's one of the harder forms of exercise to not be present. Like you can not be present on a treadmill or a bike. You could do it with weights too. You just do circuits over and over again and your form is out the window type of deal. But if you're to be present, you're in the exercise, in the movement, feeling the muscle, feeling what's going on. You are there. Heavy weights helps with this because if you're not present, you'll hurt yourself or you'll drop
the weight. It's hard to think about taxes when you're bench pressing. Yeah,
you're there, right? So that is being present. Another thing is in smartphones have really messed up the how present people can be in their workouts. Because in between sets, they're on their phones and they're not in their bodies at that moment. Yeah. You know, during the set they are, but then they're out of it. So
I'm guilty of that. That's totally. Something that I have to be mindful of is that because you can, right? We can easily get caught up in like scrolling or emailing or doing something else. And I know the value of being hyper present when I work out.
I was watching, I talked about this a long time ago, but I was watching Pumping Iron, it's a documentary in the 70s with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
How many times do you think you've watched
it? At least 100. Yeah. Okay.
I'm curious.
And each time I watch it, I notice new little details. And one thing that I noticed was that, because a lot of scenes, obviously they're working out, talking, whatever. And I noticed like, there's no music in the background of the gym. Now music wasn't introduced until a little later. But the original gyms, like you went in, nobody was playing music. Nobody had headphones on because Walkman were not really a thing then. Or if they were, nobody really used them in the gyms. It was like clanging weights, grunting and people.
Yeah.
Like they were all like there.
One more.
Yeah. They were all very present.
You got it.
So I practiced some of this because music can do that too. But music can also make you present. So I've done this now where I make a rule. I won't take it out of my pocket. It's in my pocket. And I've done it also where I don't listen to music. So I'm just there, just with my body. And it does change it. The other thing too is I used to do this with clients is I would have them, when they would write like sets and reps and what they were doing, is I told them to bring it right on paper instead of the phone so they weren't so distracted.
Yeah.
But it's literally being in your body, feeling what you're feeling and being very present. Yoga, traditional yoga can do this very well. And they teach you this on how to do that. And it forces you to kind of be there with yourself, but that's what it looks like. Same thing with food. Like if you're eating a meal that you're like, I have to eat this so that I could lose weight, you're probably like trying to distract yourself or not think about it. But what you can actually do is you can actually build good relationship with it by savoring it, focusing on it. What am I eating? What this is doing for me? And oh, I feel good. And then you start to develop a good relationship where you actually start to want to eat those things and you actually start to enjoy eating healthy food. But that's what being present, right? I'm not on my phone, not watching something, not reading something. I'm here right now during the process. And that is a great way to prevent that whole like, otherwise what happens is all you're thinking about is where you're going. Like, oh, I'm doing this long walk, but I'm just thinking about the fact that I'm going to get to that place rather than the walk itself.
I also like the advice that we give about treating workout as like a practice. And I think that coming in with that mindset, because I think so many people have this mindset of I have to come in and crush it. Like I have to break this major sweat, or I got to be almost ready to vomit, or it's not a good workout, versus going in and saying, hey, I'm going to go in and practice these movements. And then almost like allowing the workout to come to you.
Right.
I trained yesterday and it was like that. Like I was just not in the mood. I was watching football and stuff like that. And I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to there's a couple movements I'm going to do in the garage. I'm just going to practice the movement. And Katrina was working out. So I'm like, I'm just going to use her weight and I'm just going to move the bar and stuff like that. But after a few rounds of doing that, like then I started to feel really good. And then I started to stack on the weight. And it's like, I didn't go in telling myself I had to do that. I went in saying, I'm just going to practice these movements, allow the workout to come to me. And it's like, oh, now that I'm in this groove, I'm feeling good. Now I'll start to, and then it ended up being this great workout.
You know? That's awesome. So much stress and relief you can have with that mindset going in. Cause I've had so many workouts like that you're just like not really feeling it or whatever, but you just start moving and just let the workout kind of, sometimes it just is like, wow, you have all this energy and then you PR and you're like, wow, I didn't expect that.
Oh yeah.
Which is the best.
Yeah. Okay. So the next one is, this is what the data shows. By the way, there's a lot of data on this now. In fact, Harvard had a 75-year long study that was done on what makes people actually happy, like what really moves the needle. So my very good friend, Arthur Brooks, he's a professor at Harvard, and he's an expert. He's one of the foremost experts on happiness. And I remember he explained this to me in regards to beauty, how people chase beauty thinking, you know, we'll talk here in terms of aesthetics. I get the body I want. People think that that's going to make them so happy. And he goes, Sal, he goes, let's say you're a 6 on a scale of 1 to 10 in terms of beauty, and you spend all your money, time, and energy going from a 6 to a 9. So now you're a 9 on a scale of 1 to 10. He goes, your happiness on the happiness meter will barely move. He goes, it barely moves. It almost doesn't register how non-important it is. And a lot of people don't know this. They think what'll make them happy is money and fame and beauty. But the reality, the data is very clear on this, very clear. It's not, good health makes you happy. The looks don't. So the reason why fit people tend to be happy isn't because they look so good. It's because they're healthy and fit. So it's the causation the other way around. It's the fact that they're healthy and fit. Spiritual practices give people a lot of happiness. Connection with other people make people very happy. Having a sense of purpose will make you happy. You know, Arthur Brooks said that. He goes, if you have a job where you're doing the job and you feel a deep sense of purpose, like I'm doing this and what I'm doing is good and what I'm doing matters and it's important to me, then it'll bring you happiness. If what you're doing doesn't do that, and even if you make $10 million, he says, don't place your eggs in that basket because it's not going to bring you that kind of happiness. I said connection earlier. That's a big one. People, the people around you. When you look at the happiest people in terms of joy and not suffering from depression, anxiety, they almost all have these nice social networks and closeness.
Big communities.
Wasn't that one of the things that they connected to the blue zones too? Was that almost all the blue zones have some sort of like connection community like that?
Yep. Also Arthur Brooks. I don't know how he says that. He says that he's got a really great way of saying this, but he said, I don't know exactly what he says, but it's not about getting more like in terms of like material things. It's about learning to want less.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like that's a big one. I remember the first time I heard that, I couldn't help but think of my parents and my grandparents because they grew up so poor, and my dad telling me how he was confused at how unhappy people were. No, he wasn't confused. He said, it's funny how unhappy people are today. He goes, when I was a kid, he goes, I didn't have toys. I barely had clothes. I couldn't afford anything. Yeah. But we played together all the time, and the families were always together. He goes, we didn't have our own bedrooms. He goes, I shared a bed with my 5 siblings. He goes, and now we got these big houses because everybody's alone in their own rooms and everybody's got their video games and whatever and people are unhappy. He goes, I didn't know what I was missing, but I don't think I was missing much. You know, it's just wanting less. That's a big one.
I don't know if I've heard Arthur Brooks talk about, but isn't there something also connected to just giving, which is kind of tied to that? Like when you get into a place of wanting less or needing less, and then you actually are in a position where you can give to others, like how much more rewarding that is than actually achieving or getting yourself.
Oh, it's incredible. Which brings us to the last one, which is to practice gratitude. So what does that look like with fitness? Well, instead of thinking that, in 12 weeks, I'm going to be 15 pounds lighter, let's say, or whatever, you're thinking to yourself like, man, I was able to work out today. And how grateful I am that I'm in here in this gym, or I'm outside, I'm doing this exercise, or I'm moving, or wow, my knee pain is a little bit better. Or, for 3 days now, I haven't eaten any dessert, and I'm really grateful. And in fact, I feel good. I'm grateful for how I feel. Or, I've been feeling bad, but I'm grateful that I'm here type of deal. That, what was that? You brought up a
about
quote.
Anxiety.
Yeah. That the anxiety and gratitude occupy the same part of the brain.
Part of the brain. So it's same impossible pathway. To be focused on both of them simultaneously. Therefore, if you are in a place where you are anxious a lot or you have a lot of anxiety, one of the most powerful things that you can do is simply just do a gratitude practice, because just by you shifting over there will at least temporarily eliminate that anxiety, because they can't both occupy the brain at the same time. Mm-hmm. And so such a powerful, which is why too, I think that, you know, almost every self-help book or every, you know, billionaire's morning routine, they all have a practice of gratitude in there, for that simple reason that I think that everybody has some sort of level of anxiousness or anxiety that if they don't have it all the time, then it definitely crosses their life sometimes. And the power of learning to have a gratitude practice is a simple way to shift you out of that, you know, in the moment.
And it's exponential. You know, the bigger you grow and the more responsibilities you have. And so to implement a good gratitude practice, it helps to kind of neutralize that quite a bit.
Yeah. By the way, it's called a practice. I remember who told me this. It was a friend of mine, and they said it's a practice because you have to practice. It doesn't come naturally. And that's, you know, blew me away. And basically, our brains, I mean, we're the result of evolution. And, you know, we survived if we focused on the negative, right? If we focused on what was scary, don't go over there. Watch out over there. Did you hear what happened to Bob yesterday? He got eaten by a lion or whatever. Our brains are wired to do that because it keeps us alive, and that passes our genes on. Gratitude is not necessarily a natural thing. You have to practice it and develop it as a skill. So when people say practice gratitude, I know how I used to feel. I used to feel like it was almost condescending. Where like people were like, well, practice gratitude. Well, yeah, I know I'm lucky for this. And I know there's people on the other side of the world that can't do this. And yeah, I know I need to lose weight, but at least I have, you know, mobility in my lower body and I can move or whatever. But that doesn't make me feel any better. Type of, it's like, no, that's not what it means. What it means is you have to literally sit down and consciously practice gratitude. And then what happens is over time, it becomes more of a habit. And then you start to notice things automatically that you're grateful for. Yeah, when you're grateful, you're present. When you're grateful, you're present.
Yeah, I've personally had more success with being more specific to the day. Right. So like it reminds me of when I used to like do that exercise where I'd walk over to a trainer and tell them what a good job that they're doing that. I could be vague and say, oh, Justin, you're such a great trainer. I just want to let you know that. Or I could say, hey, I saw how you just did this with X client. I just want to tell you that I'm super appreciative of that. Or like, that's super unique and special. Like, so pointing. So the same thing I do on myself. Right. So if I'm trying to practice gratitude, I try and think of the things that I'm grateful for today or that day or yesterday. Right. So if you're practicing in the morning, I'm probably thinking about my day yesterday. If it's in the evening, I'm thinking about what happened in my day. And I'm trying to think of these small things in the day that you take for granted that, you know, it's like, you know what? It's kind of crazy when you think about it. Like I haven't had an issue with a vehicle getting to and from work in so long. And like, I know so many people that's a major thing. Like I'm so grateful and blessed that I'm in a position that I have this vehicle that gets me to. It's like having very specific things that you can point out in the day. I've found that has been more
same
successful.
Same here. I've lately been trying to do it twice a day. And that's a big part of it, is where I'll think about what I'm grateful for. And that happened that day. Because it's an easier practice that way than to be more general, like you said.
You know, this really what came from a coach or a trainer that had posted this. I think it was a coach or trainer. Was that it?
I believe so.
And so I wanted to share some things too that I think that I have found was successful for me, which was, and I think Arthur Brooks has talked about this. Like one of the best things that you can do when you like reach a goal or master something or get really good at something is to turn around and then teach it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so one of the most rewarding things and one of the things that keeps me going as far as in my fitness, you know, goals is a lot of when I decide, oh, I'm going to shift the way I train, or I'm going to try a different way of eating, or I'm going to focus now on getting mobile here, or I'm going to get really good at this snatch or an exercise I've never done before. A lot of that motivation is the teaching part, is knowing that going through the process of not knowing how to do it or not liking it or not wanting to do it or have never done it before, the going through the learning process of that now gives me this new perspective on how to coach and teach that to others. That's one of the most rewarding, and it's one of the easiest.
You also get to relive the joy by reliving it with someone else.
Right.
Who now gets to also learn and go through that process.
Right.
It's like you get to do it again.
And so that's been a massive hack for how do I get up every morning and still get after it or want to work out when I've achieved these certain things in my fitness journey that it's like, okay, what do I also I got to prove? And I'm already fitter than the average person. So what do I do to keep me going every day? Well, a lot of that motivation for me now is that we're in a position of teaching, and then we can teach others and passing that knowledge on and giving that, sharing that. Part of what keeps me challenging myself is that exact thing, is that, okay, you know, well, I never got really proficient at the Turkish get up. Let me get really good at this. And then while I'm doing it, I'm learning like, oh, wow, this is a thing that really helps. I should teach this and help with that. And so those things have helped me in my journey.
I think at the end of the day, don't think of a goal as a destination, but rather as a milestone. Mm-hmm. That you're going to run into along this journey that's never going to end. So you have a goal, but it's not, that's where I'm at. This is it. I'm done. It's literally, that is going to be like a sign, like a road sign. Oh, I'm at this milestone. Now let's continue on until we get to the next one. And by the way, they never end. The journey never ends. And when you fall in love with that, then fitness and looking good is a byproduct. Look, if you love the show, head over to mindpumpfree.com and check out all of our free fitness guides. We have a lot. They're all free. You can also find all of us on Instagram. Justin is at mindpumpjustin. I'm at Mind Pump DeStefano, and Adam is at Mind Pump Adam.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. If your goal is to build and shape your body, dramatically improve your health and energy, and maximize your overall performance, check out our discounted RGB Super Bundle at mindpumpmedia.com. The RGB Super Bundle includes MAPS Anabolic, MAPS Performance, and MAPS Aesthetic, 9 months of phased expert exercise programming designed by Sal, Adam, and Justin to systematically transform the way your body looks, feels, and performs. With detailed workout blueprints and over 200 videos, the RGB Super Bundle is like having Sal, Adam, and Justin as your own personal trainers, but at a fraction of the price. The RGB Super Bundle has a full 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can get it now, plus other valuable free resources at mindpumpmedia.com. If you enjoy this show, please share the love by leaving us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes and by introducing Mind Pump to your friends and family. We thank you for your support, and until next time, this is Mind Pump.